through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. It'll be Tom and Stacy today. Jake will be off through tomorrow and then back Thursday. You know, Stacy, yesterday we were rudely interrupted by the Patrick Mahomes news.
So
like
rude.
we had this entire show planned where we were going to talk about Antonio Brown and Jadeveon Clowney,
and then here comes Patrick Mahomes with his 10-year contract. Whoa, Patrick, good for you. Record-setting contract, huge breaking news. But guess what? We had stories too, Tom.
Yeah.
We did.
What business does that guy have?
Who are you, Patrick Mahomes? Who's heard of you?
And it happened like literally 5 minutes before the show.
Not even.
In some ways, that's the best and worst kind of like radio situation to be in. But y'all don't care about that. Let's talk some Antonio Brown and Clowney, because I put out a Twitter poll yesterday asking which scenario everybody would like the most. Would you like to get just Brown, just Clowney, both of them, or neither? And we got a pretty diverse set of answers, and we'll go through them in a second. By the way, this hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. Mike Blowers is going to join us for the first time this season. Coming up at 1, Mike Salk will be with us at 12:30. It'd be good to talk to Blow about some of this baseball stuff, get a former player's perspective on it. But, Stacy, first of all, I want to know your answer to this question.
Okay.
Which of those scenarios that I just listed are you most comfortable with? Which would you prefer?
I would prefer and am most comfortable with the Seahawks bringing back Clowney. I think, should I say the most likely thing?
No.
Okay. I chose Clowney.
Just Clowney.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly put this poll out. I can't really make up my mind. Like, here's the thing about Antonio Brown. I have this feeling like in the back of my mind, the people that want him are right. Like, he would make the offense better and more threatening, and he's a guy you'd have to account for out there if you're a defensive player or a defensive coordinator. I just don't think that there's a precedent or an example that I can think of where a big-time wide receiver went somewhere and ended up giving a team or leading a team to a Super Bowl. I understand why Russell Wilson would want him or why any quarterback would want him. It's like getting a new toy at Christmas. But you got to look beyond that and say, okay, what's the net result of having Antonio Brown on your team? And by the way, that's with all of the stuff, the legal things that are looming over his head, notwithstanding. We may get into that, but just for what's going to happen or what could happen on the field, it's a toy. I think it makes the offense better, but a better offense and that kind of receiver, I just don't think it gets you a Super Bowl. And that's what this team is about. It's about getting past where they've been in the divisional playoffs. I mean, first, let's get to the conference championship, I guess, but win that and then get to the Super Bowl. Does Antonio Brown translate into that? I just don't think he does.
You know, what's interesting is I've had such a similar conversation about the Arizona Cardinals and yet have fallen on the other side of it, where it's like, well, of course, DeAndre Hopkins will make a big difference. And I think the rest of the league is talking about the addition of Hopkins as though that is going to be the difference, in addition to other, you know, defensive guys that they brought in to help where they struggled last year, but that Hopkins is going to be the difference for this Cardinals offense. And that's what's going to get them off the ground, literally and figuratively. And I think that that can be true. I do think that bringing in a receiver or tight end or key receiving weapon can make a big difference for a team if not only that guy performs, but is a huge potent part of your offense. And I don't know that bringing Brown in that Seattle will do that. You not only have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who are going to command targets and attention from Russell Wilson, but you also have an offense that passes the ball. I think they ranked 20-something last year in total pass plays. They were over 50%, but not by a ton. So I do think it can make a difference, but I don't see Seattle changing their ways enough to make that possible.
You know what, Stacey, with the Cardinals, that's a good example. I think that the Seahawks and Cardinals are in two very different places. The Cardinals are building their team. Like right now, they only have, I mean, they've got Larry Fitzgerald, but adding DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals is different than adding Antonio Brown to the Seahawks. Yeah. I think Antonio Brown to the Seahawks is superfluous. You have DK Metcalf, you have Tyler Lockett, a couple of good tight ends. I think that you've got enough in terms of pass catching weapons there. I don't want to take catches and targets away from DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett in favor of Antonio Brown. When you're looking at DeAndre Hopkins and Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona, I mean, they're still building their team. That's all they have. I think that that works. I think Kyler Murray, especially as a rookie, having a guy like Hopkins there now, I mean, I think that that helps him out immensely. But if they already had Hopkins, Fitzgerald, and another elite receiver, and then they were thinking about bringing in Brown, then it would seem superfluous, right? If we didn't have Metcalf, I'd say, okay, that makes sense. Like, we're in desperate need of a receiver. Or if we didn't have Lockett, we're in desperate need of a receiver. But once you have those two dynamic pass-catching guys, and I think both of them are, plus a couple of tight ends, I think you're in pretty darn good shape.
You don't
need more than that.
And you don't have to make room for Brown. Because unless I'm mistaken, you can text 710-710, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, if you feel differently or if I'm missing something here. But unless I'm mistaken, no receiver with Arizona had more than 1,000 yards. Maybe there's a blatant one I'm missing. I don't think Larry Fitzgerald had over 1,000. Maybe he had like 7-something. I'm not quite sure, but you don't necessarily have to make a ton of room for Hopkins because Fitzgerald is getting older and he's still an incredibly reliable target, but Hopkins is going to be the center part. With Brown coming to Seattle, you have to make room for him. And what's that going to look like for not just the chemistry of your locker room? Clearly Tyler Lockett and seemingly DK Metcalf seem like really good teammates, but it's just, it's almost like you have to force it and make room for it. And I do think that clearly a wide receiver of Brown's caliber makes an offense better. That's not in question, I don't think. But is that the missing piece for your team? I don't think that's the missing piece for your team. I think the missing piece for your team is on defense.
I agree. And so to answer the poll question, now that we've talked through it, I think the best answer is just get Clowney.
I'm glad that I could bring you here.
The problem is, though, now we got to get into the conversation about money, and I don't want to give up. I don't want to pay $14 million or whatever it's going to end up being, especially now that we're hearing there are other teams that are in on him. We've heard the Raiders plus two or three other teams. Now, the Seahawks could be one of those, I guess, but I don't think that they're going to offer him more than they already have, so they're probably not in that conversation. By the way, last year, just to answer your question, the Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald did lead them 75 receptions for 804 yards.
All right.
Quick trivia for Curtis back there. Who was the second leading receiver for the Cardinals?
Second leading receiver for the Cardinals.
Is his first name Chris?
I'm going to say Christian Kirk.
Christian Kirk.
You're both right. Yeah, yeah. Christian Kirk.
Knew it was
68 receptions for 709 yards. And then after that, it's a huge drop-off. After that, it's David Johnson, 36 for 370. I mean, they need a receiver badly. By the way, do you guys know Michael Crabtree was on their team last year?
I didn't. I feel bad that I didn't know that. Did I know that?
Well, it's only he only caught four passes.
Oh, because weren't we talking about him being on the same team as Patrick Peterson? No. Nope, that's not who it was.
No.
I was thinking of someone else. Anyways, Tom, why I think it's interesting that you say that is that I think both of us would agree that the one we think would help the Seahawks most isn't the least likely. I think the least likely option is that you get Clowney and Brown. The Seahawks have like maybe a little over $10 million in cap space, or is it 13? It's not a ton. They wouldn't have enough to get like a top end defensive end right now. They have to make moves if they were to sign even Clowney, I would think. So I have a hard time seeing you sign Clowney and Brown unless you cut some more expensive veterans there. But I think that after that, maybe the least likely is that they get Clowney.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just because of the cost. I mean, the two most likely scenarios are that they get neither, or they just get Brown, because they can get Brown, you know, for basically nothing. I don't think he's going to command big money. He's lucky to be on any team at this point. But, you know, if he's working out with Russell Wilson, that video came out, what, 5-6 days ago now?
Yeah, on the first.
Of Russell Wilson working out with him?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're buddies, and it's... Oh, God. You know the other part of this, Stacey?
Yeah, what?
They were rerunning Hard Knocks from last year the other day on NFL Network. And look, all of this is pre-sexual assault allegations, which came out like right after that. But he does seem like an otherwise decent guy. I mean, at least to the camera. You know, I can understand why, if Russell's hanging around with him, why he thinks he's maybe worthy of forgiveness, or
do you have a crisis
just
of
like
conscience
to have him on a
right
team.
Now?
Me?
Yeah. About Brown.
I don't like being fooled. Like, I don't like the idea that somebody can pull the wool over my eyes by acting a certain way, like maybe Antonio Brown did on Hard Knocks. Then he went off and did all these other terrible things. But I mean, is mental illness a possibility? I don't know. I can't sit here and diagnose the guy psychologically, but he seems like otherwise a decent dude from moment to moment. So I don't know. If I were John Schneider and Pete, like, sitting down with him, I feel like you'd need a week's worth of meetings to determine who he is, not just like one meeting.
Oh, I'd want to talk
because
to
one
multiple
meeting might
people.
Not be enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yes. I want to talk to everyone. You know, I think the other interesting aspect of this, too, is where it seems like both players want to be. Clowney had good things to say about Seattle after the season, but hasn't otherwise indicated that Seattle is his, like, dream destination in free agency. I mean, the last report we heard from, was it Tony Pauline Curtis, was that Clowney wanted to go to either Dallas or the Saints, neither of which are Seattle. Whereas with Brown, and for that matter, Gordon, it kind of seems like both players, at least from the outside, in the limited amount of information we have, seem like they're fine coming to Seattle, like they want to be there. And that's the final little aspect of this. Outside of money, outside of, you know, restructuring your salary cap or contract situations to fit someone on your team, outside of just overall fit on the team, that other little aspect of it is, well, who wants to be here and who doesn't really want to be here? I don't know that Clowney doesn't want to be here, but I think that it seems like Brown is willing to make his case.
Well, I mean, he'd be lucky to be on a team at all. I mean, and by the way, you mentioned Gordon there. That's a good thing to bring up real quick here, because I was talking before about how if Brown is here, he's superfluous, or he might take away catches from Metcalf or Lockett. I don't think Gordon does that, at least as far as we saw last year. He didn't take anything away from either one of those guys. They used him in very specific situations, or Russell went to him in specific situations. I think that if he were here, that would continue. And if he developed into something bigger as part of the offense, then that's fine. But I don't think that week one they would start off, you know, game planning the whole offense around Josh Gordon. I just don't see it that way. Which is why I prefer him to Antonio Brown. All right, three questions. Let's go.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Curtis, I don't know if this is on the sound sheet, but if you can bring up the John Ryan fake field goal to Gary Gilliam. I'll give you a minute. Here's the question. The 2014 NFC Championship game was on NFL Network last night, and I caught the second half of it. By the way, I have not watched the third quarter of that game back since it happened. I forgot how terrible Russell looked that day. And Jermaine Kearse. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was terrible. Brutal. Anyway, it was on last night. And as soon as Pete Carroll called that play and I watched it over again, I started thinking that that was the best play call of Pete's career as Seahawks head coach. Can you go ahead and roll it, Curtis? No, not yet. Okay. Stacey, can you think of a better one?
Man. I mean, there's got to be the rare fourth down attempt in there somewhere. Honestly, because I was thinking trick plays when I heard of that, particularly like special team trick plays, the first thing that came to mind was a non-Pete Carroll call, which was when Michael Dixon decided to, I believe Pete Carroll, the plan was to intentionally take a safety in that game against the Detroit Lions in Dixon's rookie season. Instead of doing that, he decides to run for a first down based on this like random conversation he'd had with Carroll, presumably weeks prior, where Carroll jokingly said, "When are you going to run for it?" And to Michael Dixon, he's like, "I don't know if he was kidding, but I figured there's my chance." And you can see in real time, on like the sideline, you know, mic'd up moments, Carroll being like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" In maybe not radio appropriate language, but then freaks out and gets really excited. So that's first. I know it's the first thing that came to mind, and I know that's not a Pete Carroll play call, but it's like the opposite. I don't know. You know, he has had good ones. He gets flack for particularly last season, I think, not being as bold as people would have liked him to be. But Pete Carroll has his moments. He didn't become as great as he is on accident. He is one of the few coaches ever to win a championship at the college and pro level. He's good at what he does. I know he doesn't experiment and doesn't pass as often as people would like, but he has his moments where you think, like, you know what? That guy gets it.
Yeah, I mean, there's times, and look, he may get criticism for not going for it on fourth down. I think that you just got to pick your spots. That's the key. Let's go ahead and hear the highlight.
So the Seahawks are going to send Stephen Hauschka on to try to put the first points of the day on the board for the Hawks. It'll be a field goal attempt of 38 yards off the left hash mark out of the hold of John Ryan. Hauschka from 38. Snap is good. Spot is a fake. John Ryan around the far side. He's going to throw. He's got a man in the end zone. It is a touchdown. Seahawks, are you kidding me? Gary Gilliam, a former tight end, now a tackle.
Here's why I love that call. They're down 16-0 at that point. The game's not out of, even though there's a zero on the scoreboard, that sometimes makes it feel like the game's out of reach, but they're not. They're only down two scores, right? 16-0, if you get a couple of two-point conversions. There's 4 minutes to go in the third quarter there. They needed something at that moment, no later, to jumpstart them. Like, they had to get a score there. I mean, three might have still done it, but to get that seven changes the momentum of that game completely.
Yeah.
After that, Green Bay gets a field goal, 19-7. Then it's all Seahawks the rest of the way. It's in fact, God, I think that they took the lead with like 2 minutes to go. But they scored to make it 19-14 with like 5 minutes to go. Like, they had plenty of time.
Yeah.
And I feel like part of the reason why is because Pete chose that moment to do that. So and also, you know, like you heard, Gilliam, former tight end, it's not just a good play call. It's a good play design. So, yeah, I love that call. Question two.
Number two.
I pilfered this question from Mike Greenberg. I stole it outright from his Twitter because I like it. Which athlete would you bet on to be the best over the next 10 years? Giannis, Trout, Zion, or Mahomes?
I'm going to say Trout because I think it's a bit easier to remain durable long into your career in baseball, but I mean, it's hard not to put your money on Mahomes still. I think that I was listening to Sean Salisbury on with Clayton earlier today, and he said he doesn't think that Mahomes has even gotten close to as good as he can be. And I think that's true. I mean, he was on LeBron James has The Shop, which I think is an HBO, unless I'm mistaken, special that he has. And Mahomes was on there. And I remember this was making the rounds on Twitter when he said that he had like just recently learned how to essentially like dissect an offense or defense. And it's crazy thinking that he did that after having thrown for 50 touchdowns. So you have to think that he's only going to get better the more that he develops as a quarterback.
That's true. I mean, I'm looking at Mike Trout's numbers. Like, we've already seen the best of Mike Trout. The question is, will he continue to do it? I mean, last year, 45 home runs in only 134 games. Like, he missed 28 games, and he still got to 45 home. I mean, yeah. My God, this guy's unbelievable. I think you might be right about Trout. I mean, he's only 27. It's not like he's, you know, 31 or 32. So to get to 37,
God
yeah,
forbid
I think,
anyone
I
be
think,
31.
Yeah, I mean, if you're 31, you're washed up completely.
Get over it.
In any walk of life. All right, question three.
Number three.
Will Lamar Jackson get a Mahomes deal eventually?
I have a harder time seeing it happen. I think Lamar Jackson is insanely talented. I think that even though the NFL has evolved in the way that it evaluates quarterback talent, it still has its own biases. And I think that one of those is against mobile quarterbacks. I think that often mobile quarterbacks are not given the benefit of the doubt that they're able to dissect a defense and read a defense. I think that also they're often labeled injury prone, even if they haven't had a ton of injuries, because to people, you know, watching, the risk is always there if you leave the pocket. And as much as people say that Mahomes can create something out of nothing and he's so elusive, he ultimately is a lot closer to a Peyton Manning, like traditional kind of in the pocket passer, than he is someone who runs for 800 plus yards. I mean, Mahomes had 200 something rushing yards last year. He's really great at, he's elusive. He can still move out of the pocket and throw out of the pocket, but he's not really like a running quarterback. And I do think that the NFL still rewards those guys.
I think you're right about that, especially with the concern over injury. Now, here's the thing. I don't think Lamar Jackson would get a 10-year extension for all the reasons you just said. I mean, like, if he's going to continue to be a running quarterback and not develop into a passer, the concern over injury is that much higher than it is even for a guy like Mahomes. However, I think that if he keeps on playing at the level he's at, if he were to win MVP again,
yeah,
I mean, I think he may leave the Ravens with no choice. Like, they may have to give him Patrick Mahomes money, but not necessarily that length of contract, which may be better for him in the long run. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
But if he were to regress, then, I mean, it's kind of up to him. Like, his play will determine that. He'll make it really easy for the Ravens to decide, okay, do we need to give Mahomes money or not? He's won three MVPs in a row. I guess we have to.
Yep.
Or his play's regressed. He's throwing picks left and right. He's Jameis Winston all of a sudden. We don't have to, but we want to keep him, that sort of thing. All right, Mike Stock's coming up next. I want to ask him some of the questions that I just asked you. We'll do that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And we are back. I'm glad to have two people in studio today. Usually, if I get one, I'm lucky. Mike Salk and Stacy Rost are in studio. I'm still at home with my remote radio equipment.
With your dogs, let's Mikey, be clear.
And my dogs. Mike, last night was a rough night for George, like at 3 a.m. So that's why when you talked to me before the show, like my eyes were still puffy and whatnot.
Yep, I see it. So I up all night with the dogs. I get it.
Yep, it happens.
Tom, I got to tell you, Brock and I did the podcast this morning, and as we get ready for baseball season, which I'm, as you can imagine, geeked out about, and I think we're all excited about, you know, most of the, you know, the 60-game sprint's going to be fun, right? Are we in agreement that the 60-game sprint's going to be fun?
As someone who grew up football, not baseball, yes.
Okay. 60-game season is going to be fun. It's a sprint to the finish.
I'm okay with it.
Games almost every single night. Everyone matters. I think for the most part, people are pretty excited about the three-batter minimum for pitchers.
Cool with it.
It's going to present a ton of cool opportunities to second-guess, you know, managers. Imagine the moment where they bring in the lefty with two outs and men on second and third or whatever, and where base is loaded and he walks the guy, and now you can't take him out because he didn't get out of the inning, and then you got two right-handers come up and this lefty who can't pitch to righties has to pitch to righties. Like, I think the strategy behind that is awesome, and quite frankly, better than even or as good as some of the old and National League, you know, no DH strategy stuff. So I think they've added a ton of cool thinking to the game, which it needs.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week, but I'm not done. The putting a runner on second base in the 10th inning is the stupidest thing that's ever happened.
No, it's not.
It is fixing a problem that doesn't exist.
No, I think it's exciting. You can't say, I only want this much drama and action added to my baseball season.
There's already drama
there. Why would you not try a new thing? Because you know that they've been thinking about it before.
Because the odds are it will make games end quicker once you get to extra innings.
Well, and I do wonder by the end of the season if we'll look at it and say what percentage of players that were able to start with a runner on second ended up winning the game. And if it's very unequal,
it's just that it should get shorter at that point. Once you get to extra innings, the baseball is perfect. That is where baseball has no problem. It is tense. It's awesome. Fans are on the edge of their seat, whether you're at home or in the stands.
And like,
nobody ever gets to the 10th and then says, man, I hope this thing ends.
I've had enough.
And I'll admit, I love baseball, Tom. I know you do as well. And there are times in the fifth inning where the game drags, right? I mean, that's where the game, you want to add this thing, add it in the middle innings for an inning and see if you can boost some scoring. But no one, the only people who have ever gotten to extra innings and gotten upset are baseball writers who want to go home. And people in the game of baseball who want to go home. There's no fan ever says, oh, now that we're at the 10th, this thing's really getting boring. Nobody says that.
Question, are they doing that in the postseason too or no?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would imagine so.
I don't know why they would stop it.
Well, I mean, I guess the only answer would be hockey does, right? So the NHL obviously has its shootout during the regular season, but once you get to the playoffs, they no longer have shootouts. You keep playing overtime until somebody wins. So I would hope that would be the same for baseball, but I don't know the answer to that.
I don't want it to be. I mean, my compromise would be, if you really want to do it, do it in the regular season for 60 games this year only. If we're really sprinting, I mean, that would just go along with that. But then don't do that in the postseason. Ever. I mean, that would be, can you imagine if you get to game 7 or game 5, a deciding game of a series, you stick a runner on second, bunt them over, sack fly, and it's over?
Ugh.
I mean, that is so cheap.
It really is.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that.
The only thing I do like about it is that it might actually force teams to bunt in that situation, man on second, nobody out, and see who can lay down a bunt.
I don't know that I like it so much as I'm just really excited to see it. I have like a morbid curiosity about let's keep seeing what else we can
do. Go watch last year's minor league games. I mean, they've done it. Like, it does exist places. They did it in the World Baseball Classic too, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it exists. I think baseball's got real problems. Not necessarily as many to me. I like the game, but I would say that baseball has run into some problems in the last few years with this three true outcome thing where guys are either walking, striking out, or hitting home runs. Mm-hmm. Baseball needs more action throughout the game. One problem it does not have is that extra innings are boring.
Yes.
That's not a problem. They are fixing something that doesn't need to be fixed. And in the meantime, there's so many things that could be. There's something about it that just totally rings untrue to me. And I'm trying not to let it overshadow mm-hmm. all the other things they're doing that I love. I mean, I love the three pitcher rule. I'd like to see them do the try to end the shift. Yeah, you got to have two infielders on either side of second base. I'd be fine with that. Would you be okay with that, Tom?
Definitely. I want them to put two hash marks out there on the infield or in the outfield.
You have to stand on it?
You shall not pass this hash mark.
Huh.
You know, like the shortstop shall not pass this hash mark, third baseman, etc. You got to stay within this relative boundary.
Well, until the ball's hit,
get rid
right?
of that.
I mean, until the ball's hit.
Oh, yeah, then you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Or you don't want to take away, like, Ozzie Smith going up the middle or something.
There's
like that.
There's just a free zone.
No, you can't just stand there and watch the ball
the
go
zone
up the
defense.
They have to make plays like wide receivers in football where you have to drag.
Find the seam.
You have to toe drag. Yeah, like, yeah, he dragged his feet. Yep, no, he's in there. Have you had a chance
to look at the schedule? I mean, me and Tom were talking about it earlier, and I don't know that I feel drastically different about them facing the opponents they're facing this year versus who they were in the regular season. Do you feel any certain way about the schedule, or are you more or less excited?
No, I mean, I'm just excited to see baseball. Yeah. And with this year's Mariners team, the schedule's not nearly as important to me. I want to see the guys. I mean, I want to see what happens with some of these kids and what they're able to accomplish this year. Who they're playing probably this year, even more than normal, is not all that intriguing to me.
Yeah.
You know, the only team that kind of a miss is, I was hoping to see do we see the Padres this year? I kind of forget now.
Yeah.
All right, good. All right, my bad. I'm glad they're still going to face the Padres. And not because of the whole sort of silly Vetter Cup or any of that. I think that's sort of like a fun, young, exciting team that maybe is a model for where the Mariners are going. So I like getting a chance to see that and kind of measure yourself against where they may be going to. But no, the schedule is not as important to me this year. It's much more about, can these guys go out there and play? And by the way, Howdy, of all people, and I don't like admitting this, and here I'm going to do it publicly. Hopefully no one's listening to your show today. Howdy convinced me of something last week.
What?
He convinced me that the taxi squad was actually a good idea. Like that it was as good, if not better, than them playing in the minors.
Yes.
I was way against
that. I have no
that.
Reason to believe Howdy other than Howdy said it.
Well, that's usually a reason
I shamelessly
disagree.
Always just hype up Howdy.
No.
Yes, that's true.
He had a pretty good point that, you know, when the other team's taxi squads come to town, that they're all going to be playing against each other, and that rather than Logan Gilbert or Kelnick or whoever playing against Slappies in double A or single A or whatever, they're going to be playing against the same quality of guy from the other team. I hadn't dawned on me, maybe because I'm dumb, but Howdy was able to convince me of that. And so that part is kind of looking up to me also. So I'm like, I'm pretty excited about what this means for the Mariners and some of their young kids getting some of the development opportunities that they need, especially at the top of their minor league food chain.
I wonder if another part of it too could be developing some relationships with guys who would normally have spent all of this minor league season. Say someone's in high A and someone else is going to be triple A. Now you're going to have Julio Rodriguez able to talk to someone who would have been in a rookie league.
Putting your best guys together who are all going to eventually, hopefully, form the nucleus that you want them to. We've seen that work before, right? I mean, there was that. Do you remember the Twins group that all came up together with Torii Hunter and all those? Like, they all came up and it mattered to them. I mean, they didn't end up winning a World Series, but I think they outplayed their ability level and certainly the amount of money that they spent. Those guys ended up being a powerhouse in the American League for a while based on that. So I think there's some relevance to it, and I am excited about where the team is going. By the way, a little breaking news for you guys. I think, I'm probably not supposed to talk about this, but I think that on Friday we're going to have the play-by-play of the intra-squad game at 2:30.
Ooh.
Intra-squad Mariner game. What do you think of that?
I'm actually excited for that.
Riz.
I'm fine with it.
Goldsmith, the whole deal. Like, let's go. Yeah. Let's
you know
go
when
big.
You're on a diet and you're like, I wish I could eat anything and suddenly like a rice cake tastes good? That's me with like, I'll take anything.
It's Stacy when you're home for however many months and someone says, hey, do you want to come into work and start being in the studio?
What time? 7 a.m.? I'll be there. In the parking lot at 6:30. Ooh, can't wait.
That's Stacy now. So yeah, I think 2:30 on Friday. Details to come. But it looks like we will have the intra-squad game for everybody, which should be great.
Hey, Mike, will the Mariners win more than one game against the Astros this year?
No. How many times do they play them?
I don't know. Let's
say they play
10
times. 7 of those games are in Houston.
I think the odds are they win 2. They should win more than one, right?
They go 3-7.
I tell you what, they go 3-7 against the Astros. That's gonna be a huge win for them, just based on the talent they have and what the Astros still look like. I don't know, man. That's a tough putt. I'll take the under on 3, which I don't like to do, but I'll take the under on that. Sorry.
That's a tough downhill putt.
it's a downhill slider to the left. It's not one you like, but we'll give them the best shot they can. All right, guys.
All right, talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.
All right, up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. We got some surprises to the schedule, things we've never seen before, things that I like. Talk about it next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Stacy, I'm a little worried about you.
Yeah, why? Say,
your obsession with being the most popular person in the building.
I'm not obsessed with it. I'm a truth seeker, and I'm just trying to get to the bottom of a question that was brought up organically, which is, who do you think is the most popular person in the building?
And I was you brought that question up yourself. No one else asked it.
All I know is that the question came up, and I thought, well, I mean, I'm sure like everyone likes Jake and Tom and Curtis, blah, 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 but everyone really likes me, and so I posed the question, and Curtis, you broke up a little bit on your end, so I couldn't hear, but I think you said yes.
I didn't say anything.
Right. So, no, I don't think I have a sick obsession with it, Tom. I mean, there's other things I have an unhealthy obsession with, like TV, but this is just, I think it's just a question that came up. I love questions.
Yeah, but nobody puts a premium on societal like hierarchy like you do.
No, I mean, I don't think I put any kind of emphasis on it. I guess you could say I'm just an alpha, and you know, who really cares or counts points toward that? But
Stacy, in the days of MySpace, were you the kind of friend that would get mad if you weren't in someone's top eight?
Yes,
you'd send a sternly worded
500%. Or like, excuse me, I noticed I dropped from 6 to 7. Are you mad at me?
Yeah. What's up with this?
No, it's a joke.
Okay, I'm only saying this because you're my co-host and I need to make sure.
Would you
you're
say
okay.
I'm your favorite co-host?
Maybe.
Okay.
Today.
Fair.
You're the best one I got today, so sure. We talked a lot with Salk about the schedule before, Stacy, or about the Mariners, I guess. There's something that they're doing this year that I really, really like. Now, I think part of the reason I like this is because going back to my days as the pre- and post-game host of the Mariner games, the earlier the better, obviously. Instead of 7 o'clock games, they're doing 6 o'clock games this year. That is a great idea.
Like, yeah,
if it were up to me, I would start it at like 5, but 6 o'clock is perfect. It doesn't keep you up. I mean, we're talking about extra innings, right? If it's a 10, if it's the game is supposed to end at 10 because it started at 7 and then it goes beyond that. I mean, our schedule is okay because we don't go on the air till 12. But for most people watching the game, I mean, most people wake up at what, 6, 7, 8 in the morning, something like that. If you're staying up past 11:30, like that can really start crunching it. So a 6 o'clock start for at least for the West Coast games. I don't know what they're doing back east. But I think that is a great idea. And there were, before we move on, I'll just ask you how you feel about that.
No, I like it. I've never had a problem with it. It was weird to me that there was any, like, group of people that were complaining about late games. I mean, I never grew up on the East Coast, and so I have no idea what time games would normally be over there. But
same time.
Yeah, see, it's my understanding that they're always that late, so I don't know. I'm really upset.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Yeah, in the NFL, everybody's watching the same games all day, so that can really screw you up. The NBC game on Sunday night, that thing doesn't start till 8:30 on the East Coast. That is a bear to watch. But out here, it's not. It's a lot easier. But baseball, since everything is regionally scheduled, it's essentially the same. But I just like 6 o'clock. Now, you were telling me before the show that people were upset because there weren't more day games scheduled.
Yeah.
Well, I think people were mad because.
Well, no, I mean, I think people were mad because they're like, think of how many people right now are out of work and home or home with kids, and they just want something to watch during the day. So I see why people would want that, but I have no problem with it being at the time that it is. It was even moved up a little bit, so I don't know. I mean, we're in a really weird circumstance where that is true for a lot of people, but in normal circumstances, this time isn't weird at all.
I agree. I mean, like, if you're home, during the day, maybe you want something to do. But then if you don't have the baseball at night, what are you doing then? You know what I mean? I mean, here's the thing. If you really want, you can watch MLB Network if you get it, if you get that channel. And you can watch an earlier game, you know, during the day. Then you can watch the Mariners at night. I mean, if you really want to watch baseball all day long. I mean, plus, remember, we've got NBA coming back. And they're picking up with it. So there's going to be plenty of options, especially on the West Coast, for sports once we get this thing going. I guess my worry, just going back to COVID, like, are we going to have a lot of canceled games, postponed games? Are we going to run into a situation at the end of the season where, you know, certain teams have played 60 games, other teams have played like 57, and you've got a problem with the standings, things like that.
Think about that.
How are they going to figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like you can't really create a set rule right now because you don't know what's coming. Maybe it all goes off without a hitch. I don't think anyone's counting on that. But it's hard because you don't know what it could look like. I mean, you think, well, we set up the taxi squad so that if you have people that are on the IL for like a special COVID IL, then you have people to come up and play for them. And those people have essentially been quarantined. So you think hypothetically there's a plan, but what happens if it's 10 people? What happens if it's 12 people? The people on your taxi squad aren't necessarily all going to be guys, particularly if you're the Mariners or teams that were really looking toward development this year. Those aren't all going to be guys that were at the AAA level who would normally have come up. So now you've got some guys that you wouldn't have normally promoted in a regular season that are filling in for you. But, yeah, I mean, there's going to be, I don't know that you can really harp on an even playing field this year of all years, because there's always going to be something. And it's like, you just,
we're going to talk to Mike Blowers coming up in about 5 minutes here. But just back to one thing that you and I were just talking with Salk about, that thing that Howdy was saying about the taxi squad. I'm not quite sure. Like, I understand that you've got the players available in case somebody goes down. But what does that mean? Like, the other teams are going to bring their taxi squads and they're going to play games at the minor league park? Like, what's going on there? I didn't quite understand that conversation.
I didn't realize that the taxi squads would be playing each other. I thought they were like an
ice. Okay, I didn't either.
Curtis, are they playing each other?
It's going to be basically like inter-squad games all day, every day, down at Cheney Stadium.
So, but that would be contingent on every major league team having a AAA affiliate that's like right nearby. Is that true for all teams?
It's not, but I think they would have them play at some kind of facility nearby. Whether it be a college field, because I think the Cincinnati Reds taxi squad team is playing at the University of Cincinnati. So something like that.
I see. Yeah, because like I think they're AAA, or I don't know if it's double or AAA, but there's a team that's a minor league affiliate of the Reds called the Louisville Bats. And from Cincinnati to Louisville, it's not like it's a long trip, but I mean, you can't just be hanging out down there. I mean, that's quite a ways to go if you have to call somebody up, I guess. So, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Have them play at a local high school or something if you have to. All right, Mike Blowers is coming up next. First visit of the year with Blow. Can't wait to talk to him. 710 ESPN Seattle.